Alright, Dan, you can leave this part in, but Coughlin kind of wants us to kind of change up the show, get viewership up, so we kind of got a new spin, new take on the show. So I'm pretty ready for this, alright?
Okay.
And welcome to the HalfGuarded.com Power Hour. I'm your host, Mad Dog Mitch, and my co-host, Dan Mustang Ford.
Yeah, I'm coming in right hard and fast on my Mustang. How you doing, everybody?
Yeah. We're here on HalfGuarded.com, the fan, and we're going to talk a little women's tennis.
Oh, sexy!
Wait. No! No! God!
Oh, yeah, we're going
to... No!
We're going to talk...
That's some great clips, beautiful movie!
Hang on, we got a call on the Bed Bath & Beyond Fresh Take Gallery Furniture Hotline, Dan. You want to take this?
Yeah, come on. What you got, caller?
Hello, this is Osaka. I played Serena. Me so horny. Okay, I can't do that.
You sideways.
Okay, I'm sorry, call. We can't do this. This is stupid. Welcome to the HalfGuarded.com Power Hour. I'm your host, Mitch Pomp. This is Dan Ford.
You were not prepared for how easily and comfortably I slid into radio douchebag.
It was kind of scary. I like the hint of like anti-Asian racism.
I think it was more than a hint.
We sure were.
I thought we sounded like two guys who lost a friend in Nam.
I thought of that in the shower this morning, and I was like, what if we just went like straight like FM sports radio talk? Like, and I really like the idea of Dan Mustang Ford.
Sure. I mean, it's the only Ford car made anymore. So, yeah.
We need a cowbell. We might do a whole show of us like ripping off sports drive-by.
Exact. I mean, we're so good at it, obviously.
I think we might need to send that in. We could probably get a job in like Columbus or something.
How dare you shit on Columbus that much?
What's the worst sports town that'd be like a local radio host in? Like, that would still have like a local show?
I would say Poughkeepsie. Like, no, not Poughkeepsie, because it's in New York. And people would work in New York hoping to one day get noticed in New York City.
Yeah, I was thinking something like Wyoming.
Laramie.
Yeah, or like the only thing you talk about is Wyoming football. I would say like Honolulu,
Broncos,
but like, come on.
Broncos, you talk about the
Broncos, yeah.
That's the underrated thing about the Mountain Time Zone is that everybody in the Mountain Time Zone loves the fuck out of the Broncos.
Yeah, that's, I have one of my regulars at my, the job I work at, is from Nebraska and played football at Wyoming, and he's like, yeah, it's Broncos. Like, from Nebraska on, it's all Broncos.
You'd think the Chiefs would get a little bit of that Nebraska love.
It's just, like, I think some of it's too, like the Broncos have always been pretty good, and the Chiefs.
The Chiefs have had periods of up and down.
But I'd say what, they look good on Sunday. I know you probably didn't see it, but.
I heard they ran the pistol.
Yeah, and I mean, Andy Reid's a good, my issue with like always with the Chiefs look good week one. Andy Reid always looks good week one. He's got like half a year to prepare. It's just.
We know time management is not one of his skills.
Yeah. It's not, unlike Herm Edwards, Dan. We'll get into that in a second. That was some of the best time management I've ever seen.
You know, he is, yeah. Herm Edwards is making a good case that having a coach who's not worried about calling plays and is just worried about managing the game may be a good thing for a team to have.
The CEO model. And I think it might work in college. I mean, I think we kind of hyped it up with LSU last year. It didn't work. I did it. It's kind of what I called like the Reagan model. Where you just have, like, a good spokesman. But maybe you need someone, like, a little bit smarter to do the managing.
This actually brings me to something I've been thinking about. You're accidentally segueing, because I didn't tell you this.
Yeah.
But Tom Herman, off to a rocky start at the University of Texas.
Yeah, needless to say. Yeah.
Lost to Maryland week one. Week two, struggled with Tulsa, who won two games last year. Longhorn fans already starting to get sick of him.
Yeah.
I would say part of his issue, part of the reason why he's already starting to turn fans off is because he's really shitty with the media. And it's not that they're mad that he shits on the media, because he doesn't really. He just gives them shitty answers. And smart-ass answers and acts like everything's actually good. You're just too stupid to understand how great this team is coming along. And it got me thinking, coaches keep getting, like head coaches at major programs just keep getting younger and younger and younger. Because the thought in college football is that you need younger coaches who are up on everything that the kids like so that you can recruit the best that you can and whatnot and all that jazz. But maybe we're missing the trick here that these guys like Tom Herman and all these young coaches are just not prepared for the level of scrutiny that comes with being a head coach. And they're all, like, none of them have learned the nuance of how you deal with local media and talk to the public. And yeah. They all kind of are just, like, autistic assholes.
Well, you think, like, I think some of it's too, like, they see, like, how Saban kind of does it.
Yes,
but
that's
like,
true.
Saban, like, was he really that way at LSU?
Yeah, he was always a fucking hard ass, but he won everywhere he was at.
Yeah.
So, like, if you, the thing that a lot of these coaches don't get is that you can only be, like, the way Nick Saban talks to the media is not one of the things that helps him win. It's one of his few weaknesses. Like the fact that he,
5 foot 4.
Yes. The fact that he gives himself like basically no rope in case things don't turn out well because he acts like such an asshole is a negative. But
well, maybe that's
so
like,
much that he's able to get away with it.
And maybe that's kind of the thing with like Saban seems like the type of guy that like he can't work with the net because he'll fuck it up. He needs like no net and like alligators underneath that tightrope to make it work.
He also seems like the kind of guy who's maybe easier to deal with one on one. Maybe.
Well, I think it was like the full cast or something pointed out too. Like the worst time to ask Saban a question is like after a blowout because like he's like more intense during the blowout than anything else. If you notice, like if it's a close game, he seems to be like a little more cool. But if it's like after they won a game like 54-3, he's like livid because like his third string Nickelback fucked up one play.
Yes. And that's an old Bear Bryant thing where you go easy on them when you do well and you're hard on them when they blow them out, you know.
Yeah.
Spurrier was famously shitty to the media, but he won a lot.
But also, but Spurrier was charismatic too. I think there's something like if you're shitty to the media but like you're likable somehow.
The thing with Spurrier is that he gave great copy by saying crazy stuff sometimes, but he was an abject nightmare to cover day to day because like if you reported anything in the newspaper that was even slightly different from what he said, he would come read you the riot act and try to get you fired.
Yeah.
Like he was a real shithead.
But he sold papers.
And he won a lot, so it doesn't matter that he was a shithead. Because like what is the beat writer from the Gainesville Sun, whatever, what are you going to say about Steve Spurrier? Like, he is the most beloved person in the history of the program.
Yeah.
It just got me thinking about, we've kind of run guys like Mac Brown. Like, the Mac Brown-style head coaches have kind of gotten run out of the sport. Guys who weren't particularly good X's and O's-wise, but they were really good recruiters, and they were really good at managing a program to administration and to media and to alumni. Like, he was really good at balancing a lot, like, keeping a lot of plates spinning with a lot of people in the back.
Like similar, you know, back to him, Herm Edwards.
That brings me to Herm Edwards, is that maybe Herm Edwards can show everybody. I don't think we're going to see a bunch of 64-year-old coaches getting hired.
Because
Herm Edwards, I have a feeling Herm Edwards is going to do pretty good with Tom Graham's players. And he's going to do a terrible job at recruiting.
Well, I think Herm Edwards, though, I think he does. Arizona State it's mythical because it's never worked. But in theory, it's a good recruiting situation. Because, like, it's a pretty easy school to get into. Like, it's a fun place to be. It's like the Gronkowski of colleges.
Well, Gronkowski went to Arizona, so.
But you know what I mean. Like, it's for big, dumb, athletic.
I think part of the issue Arizona State has is that one Arizona's doesn't have any like natural recruiting base in state. I do think it is an easy place to recruit to out of state, but they have to do all of their recruiting out of state. That's the one.
But I think I think that base is growing, and as Arizona's population changes and like as more kids start to grow up there, I think in like the next 10 to 20 years, like they'll have a decent in-base talent. Because I mean, we see it with like Colorado-ish.
Yeah. I mean, you can definitely see, I can definitely see what you're talking about with Arizona State. And I see it more with Arizona State than Arizona. Yeah. Arizona all seems like a program that's always going to be kind of screwed.
Well, and like, look at how bad they are this year. I mean, Tate has been awful.
God, that is, everybody involved in that fucked up.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
But, you know, getting back to Herm Edwards, they played Michigan State.
Well, let's talk about that game really quick, if you want to. Like, obviously I think we all knew Michigan State was overrated, right? Michigan, like, this is still a big win for Arizona State.
It's a big win for Arizona on a psychic level. Yeah. Part of the issue is they played like 8 games in the rain last year, just by fluke. They had that many games that ended up being in the rain. So you're in a conference where there's not a lot of good quarterbacks to begin with, and then they're all having to throw passes in the rain.
Yeah.
And it just looked like that covered up a lot of problems in State's pasty. And we've seen this starting to happen for a few years with to run their style of defense. The style of defense that Michigan State kind of made famous over the last 10 years has been quarters coverage, you know, where everybody's sort of in this like hybrid man zone, and they read the they read the wide receivers and decide whether they want to run it, whether they want to stick in a zone, or whether they're going to man up, and it gives your safeties the ability to sit there and crash down on the run. It lets you do a lot of things. But the flip side of that is that your guys are out on an island. Like, they're all alone. And as we've seen, teams are starting to game plan around beating that specific style of defense as more teams run it, and it's not working the same way it did a few years ago. They're kind of all getting shredded. And in this game, Arizona State threw the ball all over the field, and Michigan State couldn't defend a slant. I mean,
yeah, and really, I thought Arizona State, like, the most impressive thing about that win was, like, just that beautiful clock management, and, like, the field goal kicker not fucking it up, because usually that doesn't tend to go well for teams.
Yeah, especially at the college level, to, like, do that NFL style, we'll play for field goals.
Well, I mean, we saw it. I mean, look at the NFL. This Sunday, Cleveland went for the field goal in overtime, and they got blocked.
Yep.
Like, sometimes you're just not rewarded. Like, sometimes you have to just go for the fucking time. And, like, we saw where with App State, that probably wasn't the best idea, but sometimes not the worst.
And part of the issue, part of the thing about this game is the weather. Michigan State could not handle that desert weather. Even though this game was at night, they were dying. Like, you looked at that game, and those guys were sweating to death.
Yeah.
They could not handle that weather.
Well, I thought, you know, and to switch to another game, like, I was watching Georgia, South Carolina, and, like, it was hot. I think it was, like, felt like 96 now. Like, I think at one point, Brad Nessler, who's with CBS
yes.
now?
Yes.
I think he just said something like, man, I wish I was wearing shorts. Like, because he is not, he clearly is not used to that SEC. Because, like, Danielson's just over there, just, like, used to it. But you look at the Georgia sideline, and those guys have oxygen masks and all this extra shit. South Carolina's got none of that. And I thought that was just kind of a different have-not kind of moment, even in the SEC, where, like, Georgia's, like, a little more prepared to deal with shit because I guess they have more money.
Well, they've also got Kirby Smart, who comes from that Nick Saban school of just, no, you want us to win? You're gonna give me, like, you're going to knock down a wall in a locker room you just built so that I can make a tunnel so that the guys don't have to, like, there's a story about, Nick Saban found out all of his linemen were eating at a particular restaurant downtown Tuscaloosa, and they were all, it was caught, like, they were all showing up, like, a couple of minutes late getting back to practice because they had to drive through traffic in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah.
So he got the university to pay for this restaurant to come and cater food in the facility just because he found out that most of his linemen were eating there. And it's like, you can't do that at Appalachia.
Well, yeah,
you know what I mean?
But I think some of it's, too, is that, you remember, like, Georgia's, Bill Walsh?
Georgia's got that same thing happening.
Yeah. I think it's like that Bill Walsh kind of mindset when he's with the Niners, where he's like, first class. We're going to, like, if we want to be an elite program or elite organization, we're going to give our guys stuff that's elite. It's like, we're going to, I think this is before the private charter jet thing, so he's like, we're all going to sit in first class. You know, like, this is how we're going to treat you. We're going to treat you like you are the elite, and you're going to play like it. And I love that kind of, when you have the money to do it, that's a great mindset to have.
Absolutely. Because,
like, if you give guys nice shit, guess what happens? Like, look what happened with Oregon. They get nice shit, and they were in a national championship 10 years. You know, like, some of that, players like that, and they're going to respond to it. But when you're playing, like, you know, I think there's a reason Iowa wins 4 games, you know, loses 4 to 5 games every year. It's because, like, their facilities probably kind of suck.
Hey, now. Their visiting locker room is painted pink. Don't you be knocking Iowa facilities.
And all that school spends all the money on that stupid children's hospital instead of catering fresh Italian to their linemen. It's ridiculous. But you want to get into the deep dive game?
Hey, let's go. Let's do it.
Lock in. I will say, I saw a lot of this game live. My DVR did not record it for some reason. So you're probably going to know a little bit more about this game.
Well, the game we're talking about is Texas A&M and Clemson.
Yes. And my first takeaway from this was just, like, A&M looks to be where they were.
Well, they're better than they were last year. I would say that, because their defense looks more like a defense.
Wasn't that kind of the plan, though, the whole time? Like, wasn't last year low-key like a rebuilding year at A&M or something weird?
I would say the biggest issue, and I think the real reason Sumlin got fired, is that at no point was he ever able to build anything that looked like a defense. And they spent all that money to get John Chavis away from LSU, and he couldn't build a defense either. So I would say the fact that Texas A&M was able to hold Clemson to 28 points and shut them out in the fourth quarter, you know, and make this sort of a normal-looking game instead of, you know, hey, we lost to Alabama 38-41, but shoot, that was a lot of fireworks. Like, that's sort of how their big games went under Sumlin. This one being, you know, if we got the two-point conversion, or if, you know, if we had managed to not fumble that ball and have a little bit more time, you know, fumble that ball through the back of the end zone, hey, maybe we still could have won this thing. Whereas against anybody else, like against in a Sumlin era, it would have been like, well, we didn't get the ball last, like, because our defense had no shot at stopping it.
Well, how much of that was like Clemson kind of
That's always an issue with Clemson, is that once a game is, once they're up by 10 points, they just put, you know, they slow this thing down to a crawl and, you know, don't do anything that lets the other team in it, but we're just going to sit on this thing. That is true, but Texas A&M, I think, made one of the better coordinator hires when they hired Mike Elko, former Wake Forest defensive coordinator and former Notre Dame defensive coordinator, who's been extremely successful at schools with less talent than Texas A&M. That has helped a lot. You know, Jimbo Fisher, we'll see if he can keep this going, because here's my big thing about Texas A&M with Jimbo Fisher. So I don't think he's going to be able to recruit the players he needs to do what he wants to do unless he changes what he wants to do. I think taking over what Sumlin has left him and the guys are sort of buying into it, that's all great, but running his style of offense, I'm not sure you're going to be able to recruit high-level Texas players to come play the system he wants to play.
And my takeaway from this, too, is like this is just where A&M was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't come away from this game and be like, oh, yeah, A&M's back. This is about what they were. Like, weren't they number four, 2 or 3 years ago?
And Texas A&M in particular has this way of having September Heisman and really looking like they've got it all figured out early in the season. And then they lose 4 games in the SEC and you're like, oh, yep, they're still Texas A&M.
Yeah. So, like, if A&M goes in there and, like, upsets Auburn or Alabama or even like LSU, we'll start talking. But like, to be up in a big game at home and like to lose to Clemson by a few points, that's just, I mean, you're a good program, but you ain't great. Like, a lot of teams would have done it, I think. Especially in that environment A&M had. You know?
I will say, I talked about this like a few weeks ago, like that Bud Elliott proof of concept thing. This might be a proof of concept. Like, we might be getting close to them having that proof of concept that, you know, you prove to recruits that, hey, this is going to work here. And part of how you prove that is, hey, we went toe-to-toe with Clemson without me recruiting any of my guys yet.
Maybe, but, like, if you get blown up by Alabama and Auburn, then it's like, well, who gives a fuck?
He needs that, like, that Hugh Freeze upset win over one of the big SEC powers.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's, I mean, they could probably upset Auburn.
Yeah.
Oh, talk to me. I'm a very guy who's not going to buy anything Auburn. As an Auburn fan, not going to buy anything Auburn selling until they, you know, even if they beat LSU, I'm not. Just not buying any.
I think the biggest thing for Texas A&M is that, okay, great, you almost beat Clemson. You've now got to play like 2 or 3 teams of almost the same level
in your
conference,
and
you can't fuck up too many times or else
you're
back in that 8-4. You know,
it's like, yeah, you almost beat Clemson, but, like, didn't NC State almost beat Clemson, like, 2 years ago? Like, a lot of teams almost beat Clemson, but they don't.
Yeah.
You know? Like, only one, really, and that's with, like, Alabama. the best team in, like, modern.
And also the team even better than Alabama in history and current talent, and that's Syracuse.
Yeah. But, like, you know, you talk about, like, the, you know, maybe a weakness with Clemson going forward or that Dabo Ball kind of style of, you know, taking the foot off the pedal. If a few things go wrong, they are primed to be upset by any team.
I would say of all the elite teams in college football, they are the most gettable.
But also, like with that front four, it's gonna be rough to beat.
Yeah, I'm not saying that you're definitely gonna beat them. I'm just saying compared to Alabama or Washington, I think that's a easier. I think you can grab a hold of.
But like you've gotta play them away. And, like, in Syracuse's case, you got to hope, like, their starting quarterback gets hurt and no one else is really there that has any sense of leadership.
I also think it helps if you play in a weird place that's not...
Yeah, and on a weird night. I think some teams have adjusted to it, but, like, you remember back when Thursday and Friday games kind of became popular? There was always an upset on Thursday.
Yeah, because it was weird and, you know, it was out of the norm, and it was, like, that knowledge everybody was watching.
Yeah, and, like, you notice, like, the elite, like, you don't see, like, Alabama or really any SEC team play on Thursday, but you don't even see, like, Clemson really do it that much. I guess they did
last year. Not anymore.
Yeah.
Less. I mean, they lost to Syracuse last year on Friday, I think. But the NFL's kind of...
But think about it, like, that's the game Syracuse probably agreed to, cause, you know, Clemson would agree to, because, like, it's fucking Syracuse. You would think you would just blow them out, regardless of what day.
Yeah, and the ACC has a Thursday night contract, and so I think everybody has to play at least one Thursday night game. And it's like, okay, yeah, we'll do our Thursday night game against Syracuse. They're not going to beat us.
Well, did they do FSU Clemson, like, 3 years ago? On, like, Thursday or Friday on, like, Halloween or something weird?
I think so, but they've just moved... They're moving away from Thursday night games because they found out that you just can't...
Well, the NFL's there, so it's just like...
Like, the NFL's gone all in on Thursday night games while being on television, or being on national television instead of it just being the NFL network.
But I think, like Friday night's a great night, for especially, like, Pac-12 or more West Coast.
See, most
of
the schools don't want to go Friday night because they don't want to step on high schools and get the high schools mad at them.
Yeah.
Friday night is a thing that ESPN wants, that the schools – it's the one thing that schools will stand up to ESPN on because no coach wants to make all the high schools.
Yeah, but I think some of that, though, is just, like, bullshit. Because, like, I think no one's going to not go to a high school game because, like, Clemson's playing.
I mean, the high schools, whether they will or won't, the high school coaches see it as, like, you're fucking us. And no high-level college coach wants to piss off high schools.
Yeah.
And give a leg up in recruiting to, you know, somebody else.
Yeah, like, if the ACC's doing it and the SEC isn't, then, like, maybe a guy from South Carolina's going to be like, well, fuck Clemson. I'm going to go talk to South Carolina about this player. I could see that. Well, let's kind of move on for a second. Let's move on to the other big game of the night, Kentucky-Florida, Dan. Kentucky, for the first time in our lifetime, has beaten Florida. How wild is that?
I'm just more surprised that it didn't happen a little bit sooner.
Yeah, I mean, it should have happened last year. I mean, we knew it was coming, I think. Kentucky's been beaten at the door for the past, like, 3 years. That was a pretty big win for Kentucky, though. I mean, I don't think it's a lot of Florida people are very upset, but, like, I think we knew this Mullen thing might take a little more time.
Yeah, I'm annoyed at people jumping on Mullen like it's Mullen's fault. Like, the most irritating thing to me that happens in college athletics is when you have an objectively shitty coach who does an objectively shitty job, gets fired, and then people get mad at the guy who comes after him for having a shitty team and not winning any games. It's like, well, yeah, Jim McMullen came in and for 3 years didn't recruit anybody and didn't develop a single offensive player to be
one man. And nor did really Muschamp.
Muschamp did a really good job at recruiting and developing defense. Did not recruit a single offensive player above 3 stars.
Yeah, so like for the past decade, basically, you haven't really had much.
But McElwain did inherit a top 5 defense. And having a top, and like when people go, well, McElwain, he made a division final. Well, one, the division sucked because that was before Georgia got their shit together.
I think Georgia's in the middle of like a rebuild. And wasn't that like during like the Missouri run or something weird?
Yeah. It was like Missouri had won the SEC like 2 years
ago. It's
like
I think Georgia was like retooling and then like Tennessee had just fallen off a cliff and I think Spurrier just had gotten old.
Yeah, Spurrier's recruiting had collapsed at South Carolina because of his age.
Tennessee didn't recruit an offensive line.
Tennessee was like in that 7-4, 8-5 funk where that they never ended actually. They were never able to actually pull themselves out of. And, you know, Missouri was winning SEC East division titles with three-star recruits that Gary Pinkel coached up.
Yeah.
And so Florida, you know, just by virtue of having this really kick-ass defense, you know, they were able to, they were able to do some things.
Yeah.
But when you, you know, you take away that defense, Florida was like a 4-8 team. And as they got, as you got towards the tail end of Jim McElwain's defense, or tenure there, what happened? Well, once he no longer had Will Muschamp's defense, they were shitty and went 4-8 because that's the kind of team he built.
So yeah,
you're gonna get mad at Dan Mullen because Jim McElwain's a fucking idiot who doesn't know how to coach? I don't get that. I don't get why. That's the one thing about fandom I'm never able to understand is the, well, this guy in charge isn't good at his job because he didn't win a game, and it's like, you do realize he hasn't, like, this, he hasn't been able to recruit all these.
And he's only hadn't even been there a year.
Like, he,
you know?
Like, Kirby Smart went 5-7 his first year, 6-6. Yeah. And then year two went to a national championship game. Like, nobody wins in year one.
Yeah. Well, clearly, with the new hires this year, the only guy who's beaten an FBS team is our boy, Herm Edwards. Our god here on the Power Hour, Dan.
The best
in my life.
College football.
Yes, the best. I have given my life to Herm Edwards and his total quality management system.
PDQ, parts delivered quickly.
Pretty damn quick.
But it's just, I don't get that mentality of like, you sat here and hated the last coach and said he's a shitty recruiter and a shitty coach, and then you expect the next guy to just walk in and fix everything.
I think this is some of like the issue you have like with Auburn fans with Malzahn, to bring this back to Auburn, because this is an Auburn podcast, of course. But you remember like first year went to a national championship, and like I think people thought that's like the new norm there, and it's just like, nah, he just kind of got really lucky. Like, otherwise, he's got two or three losses there.
Yeah, you know? Also, here's the other thing. When Gus Malzahn took over, you still had, like, the seniors and the juniors.
Yeah, it's just
from
that
when
offense
Auburn
was,
had made that Cam Newton.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it wasn't
And it was just that offense was very... I mean, that's a team that did go 0-4 in the SEC. Like, he didn't inherit a great offensive team.
No, I think that was... I think they were misleadingly bad because they had a dumbass offensive coordinator come in who tried to completely change what they were good at, and those pieces were good fitting Gus Malzahn's offense. They were bad doing whatever horseshit pro-style bullcrap they tried to do.
Well, and I think, like, Malzahn got Dick Marshall, and that probably helped a lot.
Yeah. But he had the pieces for a great Gus Malzahn offense.
Yeah.
He didn't have the pieces to run whatever pro-style horseshit.
I just remember there was one guy, I think it was against LSU that year, where, like, they're trying to do the two-minute drill, and all they can do is, like, throw a screen pass and, like, QB run. Like, it was really bad. But the main point is, like, I'm sure there's another great turnaround I can't think of, but even, like, what, Saban was 6-5 his first year, too,
lost
right?
Lost to Louisiana Monroe.
So, you still see, yeah. So, like, you don't really see a quick turnaround. If you do, it's, like, very rare. The conditions have to be right. Well, like, in the Auburn game, you got lucky against Georgia. That's what that was. And probably Alabama, because Saban made a miscalculation.
And I would also say, to Florida fans, there's a cost of fucking up two straight head coaching hires. I think that's one of the big lessons of Florida football. And it's one we have to learn every so many years. I'm surprised we didn't learn it with Texas, because Texas is a good example.
Well, look through Florida, it's right there in your division with Tennessee. Tennessee was one of the best programs in SEC history.
But see, everybody wants to do this horseshit whenever a program like Tennessee goes down or Nebraska, and do, well, they can never be good again because there's just not a lot of recruits in the state of Tennessee, and all that shit is horseshit because they're a blue blood program.
It's like, if you're Tennessee, Atlanta's right there.
Tennessee's right there, and plus you're a blue blood program. Blue blood programs can recruit.
Like, Tennessee, like, Atlanta's there, and Ohio's right there. Like, you've got two of the better recruiting hotbeds.
You're in
like
between, and Atlanta's bigger than it's ever been. Like, Atlanta keeps becoming a bigger, like, Atlanta might pass South Florida.
You know, and I just saw, I think we had this, like, debate a few weeks ago, but I saw a stat with it. Like, you're more likely, if you play, like, in Georgia, to become an NFL player now than any other state. I think they send, like, a better rate. It's, like, 0.4%. It's something wild, but there's a lot of talent, Neil.
Yeah.
Coming.
And the issue with Tennessee is not, oh, you just can't get kids to play in East Tennessee anymore. It's that you keep fucking hiring bad coaches.
Kids are going to Tuscaloosa.
Like, Tuscaloosa's a pile of shit. There's nothing to do in Tuscaloosa.
Clemson, what the fuck? Clemson, South Carolina, right? Like,
Clemson, South Carolina is literally 30 miles from anything. And if this stuff was true, then Georgia Tech would win the national championship every year.
Yeah. Or like Ohio State would. Or like fucking, there'd be a school in New York that was really good. Or Pittsburgh would be very good, you know? Or USC.
Like, USC would never lose. And that's just not how it works. And the issue is, no matter how much, if you are in that blue blood club, you can always get it back if you hire the right guy.
Mm-hmm.
But
and I think, like
if you hire, if you fuck up two hires in a row, you're fucked for the next decade.
Look at Georgia. You know, sticking that, like, look, Ray Goff and Donnan were two pretty fucking shitty hires after Dooley, so to speak. And it took a Mark Richt to fix it.
It took Mark Richt 10 years to get Georgia, like, halfway deep.
Yeah. And, like, if there was a playoff back then, Mark Richt might have stumbled into a national championship. You know, absolutely. Like, we're in a different environment. Even look at, like, I guess Ohio State's always made pretty good, so it's not really there. It was Ohio State in the 90s.
Yeah, John Cooper was there for years recruiting really good players and then always losing to Michigan. And then always losing the Rose Bowl.
And you know, your boys, Michigan, two awful hires, and, like, it's been pretty rough waters for Harbaugh. Like, yeah, he's had success because he's a good strategic coach, but the talent hasn't really been there, especially on offense.
Yeah, it's just hard. Like, because the reality that fans never want to hear is that your program doesn't mean anything to anybody at the high school level if they're not good when they're in high school.
Yeah.
Or if they weren't at least good when they were a kid. And when they mean kid, I mean like 4 years, like when they're in middle school.
Yeah.
Because that's all they know. They don't know all this
stuff. Like you said, otherwise Miami would win every fucking championship every year. Like, who wouldn't want to go play football in Miami, Florida?
You know, but you can't, fans never want to hear that stuff because they want to believe that their program is a beautiful, lovely, wonderful snowflake that will always be successful forever and ever and ever, and every kid will always want to go there. It just ain't how the shit works. That's just not.
Well, and that's why sometimes, you know, you got to pay a player's dad to get one guy there to turn your whole program around.
Sometimes you just got to make shit happen.
Like I said, ain't nothing wrong with cheating.
It's an ongoing investigation.
Ole Miss has been trying for years. And they almost have.
They were just way too incompetent at cheating. If you watch the SB Nation documentary, it has like 47 names and it's on YouTube now.
What's another? I did watch the Georgia-South Carolina game with some Georgia fans, Dan. And I will say I was very inebriated, but not on alcohol, but on the official supplement of Colorado football, marijuana. Focused in, but it allowed me, Dan, to focus in a little more of the game. And I think my big takeaway with that one is I don't trust Drake Fromm to win me a big game. I don't think he has to until November, probably. But that's going to scare me if I'm a Georgia fan. I don't think Fromm is, maybe he'll learn, but I don't think he's a good enough decision maker to realize, like, I don't have to force the ball in 3rd and 13 because my defense is really fucking good. But, like, maybe, like, an Alabama or a Saban quarterback's always going to kind of get that. Like, I can throw it away on 3rd and long because we're going to probably figure this out. I don't know. Did you get a chance to see any of this game?
I didn't get to see as much of it as I wanted to, but
yeah.
Just seemed like a slow strangulation. It seemed like an old-fashioned
South Carolina had it to take advantage, but they never did. And that's good on Georgia because it stopped them.
Like a Will Muschamp team just never has enough offense to do anything?
Yeah, wild. With how good this quarterback was supposed to be. I didn't think that quarterback looked very good, though.
I mean, do they ever look good when they get to play for Will Muschamp? Hey, how's that, like, Will Muschamp's going to let him run a no-huddle offense?
Yeah, they tried it. They threw a pick or something right away.
And then Will Muschamp freaked out, hit a whiteboard, and
that's the end of it. I'll always love Will Muschamp, the defensive coordinator. Muschamp, the head coach, he's going to need a better offense. Like, if you gave him Matt Canada,
it wouldn't matter. He'd run him off.
Let's say Muschamp and Matt Canada were just best friends and somehow it worked. For whatever
reason. I don't think Matt Canada's an easy guy to be friends with.
Maybe Muschamp isn't. Maybe, damn, maybe we should start shipping Canada and Muschamp together. Two collective boys.
It's too late now because Matt Canada's going to be a head coach.
At Maryland, baby.
If not at Maryland, then somebody else is going to hire him and go, you know what? That seemed to work. I'm going to do that.
Maybe Purdue. You think Purdue? Do they get another big loss for Purdue this weekend?
Well, I mean, Jeff Brohm is a good coach. Yeah. He did a really good job last year getting them to a winning record. He's not that much of a worker, though. This is not a good team, and they were kind of lucky last year.
And we kind of – and we've talked about this with Purdue. Like, Purdue needs to be, like, a system team. Like, they need to run an option or some weird offense, right? Like, they can't be like everybody else. They need, like, a handicap kind of, right?
Definitely. Because you just can't get great players to Purdue.
The walk and stick, that is the option. Nice. Was there any other game that you'd like
to discuss? Speaking of option, Georgia Tech and South Florida lit up the scoreboard.
Yeah. And Tech, South Florida, that reminded me a lot of Tech, Tennessee from, what, last year?
I would say it was wilder because Tech, like...
In terms of, like, total yard, like, Tech had, like, 200 more yards than South Florida or something.
I think the talent disadvantage that Georgia Tech is always at against other programs, and, yeah, that includes a top-level AAC team.
Yeah.
Is just, they, like, South Florida had so much more speed on the field than they did that when it came time for special teams, they gave up 2 kick returns for touchdowns. Because South Florida's just faster than
them. Well, South Florida had, what, a world-class sprinter? It's a kick return.
When you can get like 2 touchdowns in the first quarter without your offense seeing the field, that's rough.
But you know, I think this could be a low key good loss for Tech because I'm not sure. This tells me that Tech might win a big game.
I mean, South Florida absolutely could not stop their offense.
Yeah,
it was the same old thing you see from Georgia Tech every year, which is if their offense makes one mistake, which in this case, you know, Kwas Cersei fumbled the ball with a chance to drive and put the game away, and that led South Florida back into it, and South Florida ended up winning the ball game. You know, if their offense isn't absolutely perfect, their defense isn't good enough, and their special teams is really, 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 shitty.
I'm going to keep circling, I think it's Clemson at Tech this year. I'm going to keep circling that, though, as maybe the Clemson upset loss.
Well, I don't think
it's
going to
be at Tech.
Really is good at defending that option. Like, he plays scout quarterback the week of the Georgia Tech game.
Well, I guess with the way Clemson is, though, like when we talk about the weirdness with Clemson, like, it's not based on any sort of science or expertise, Dan. It's just kind of based on a feeling.
I don't know if the Georgia Tech game is going to be the one where they lay an egg. They seem to care too much about that game.
That's just the one I'm interested in. It's the one I'm going to circle. But we'll cross that boat when we get there. Before we get to picks. Any other game? We had USC Stanford. I think we all agreed Stanford killed USC.
Yeah, USC's not good. I wouldn't be surprised if they got a different coach in.
Yeah,
Clay Helton is some big disaster, but you got a different AD than the one who hired him. He wasn't the most impressive hire in the world. He can't be that cheap. He can't be that expensive because who else was going to hire that guy? I wouldn't want to be him right now. As far as you know, his relationships with his athletic director after. I think especially for a lot of old school USC people like Lynn Swann, getting out-muscled by a team like Stanford, I think that drives them.
Yeah.
And I would say going back to the Georgia Tech South Florida game, I think there was 2 games this weekend that showed off the gulf in the 3 games this year that showed off the gulf, or no, it was 2. 2 games that showed off the gulf between different teams in the G5. Mm-hmm. One was the fact that USF had a clear talent advantage over Georgia Tech, even though Georgia Tech is an ACC team built, you know, based in Atlanta, and South Florida's in the AAC. And the other was Boise State versus UConn. And oh boy, is there a big talent mismatch between a high level.
Boise State had, what, almost 1,000 yards in that game?
They had 800 and I think 80 yards of total offense.
Like closer to 1,000 than most teams are going to get this year, obviously.
I think it was the most total yards in a game since Houston broke 1,000 against death penalty SMU.
Another quick note, I know Nebraska's not really there and they made some mistakes. I think this Colorado team's pretty good and probably. Like, joking aside with Herm Edwards, like, Colorado probably wins the Pac-12.
I'm not so sure. Because really, if you look at the statistics, Nebraska should have won this game. They just made too many costly penalties, especially that last one where the guy hit too soon and they had too many turnovers. But
they dominated Colorado State, who beat Arkansas. That's got to count for something.
That may not count. Arkansas may not have more than, like, one. But, you know, getting back to the Group of Five thing, it's like, Boise State has a clear talent advantage over a lot of schools in the Group of Five.
Mm-hmm.
South Florida, Central Florida, Houston, maybe SMU. You can maybe talk me into including SMU in that. But definitely Houston, Central, South Florida, and definitely, you know, definitely Boise. And that is, like, if one of those jobs was to come open, there would be a lot of head coaches very much interested in one of those because they have an ability to recruit, they have a level of facilities, they have a level of budget that is way above the schools that they're going to be playing. It obviously, it's not like if the Alabama job, but if you're at the Group of Five level, those are basically Alabama-level jobs for that level of football because they've got all these natural advantages over the other schools they're probably going to be playing. When people talk about, ooh, conferences, this, we want to be in this conference, I think a lot of that is hokum because do you think East Carolina or UConn are in a better shape being in the American than if they were in the Conference USA?
Nah.
Like, look at what Lane Kiffin was able to build last year at South Florida. If they were in the American, they would have won 6 games top. Nobody would have been talking about it. Who did I say?
It said South Florida.
Oh, Florida Atlantic. Look at what Lane Kiffin was able to do at Florida Atlantic just because it's a shitty conference and he's the best recruiting school in that shitty conference. I would rather be the best in my conference than be the bottom feeder of a G5 conference. And when I look at UConn, I mean, there's people at UConn who seriously want to dump football and go back and rejoin the Big East.
Yeah.
And I kind of think they're right, because what hope does UConn ever have? Like, the only hope UConn did have was when the Big East Football League was still around and they were still technically in a Power 6 league with a chance to go play in a major bowl every year if they won their conference. And it's like, all right, well, there's only so many power, you know, there's only so many BCS conferences. So, UConn being one of them, it's not that bad a job. That's not the case anymore. What is the difference between UConn and Temple? UConn's probably a better program. Or Temple's probably a better program. Because there's more talent in Pennsylvania than there is in UConn, you know, in Connecticut, New England. Yeah. Is there really any difference between UConn and UMass? Other than, UConn fans are obviously think they're much better than lowly UMass. But realistically, is there any difference?
No, not really.
I mean, you're both way behind Boston College just because Boston College is in the ACC.
Yeah.
And you're not. You're both behind Rutgers because they're in the Big Ten, and you're not. You're both behind Syracuse because they're in the ACC, and you're not. You're both behind Pitt. You're both way behind Penn State, and that goes without saying. But, like, you don't have any recruiting base, and you're behind all these other programs. What are you doing playing against South Florida every year? Of course you're going to get killed. Of course Central Florida is going to beat you by 60. Of course Boise State is going to put 800 total yards up on you. You're a cupcake. That's what you are. So stop pretending that you're not. And if that means drop down and give up on this football thing and concentrate on your basketball league and what's best for your basketball program, great, do that.
Yeah, and then you know what? You'll have more money. Give nicer shit to, like, the women's basketball program, which is clearly the best thing at UConn, right?
And that's the other thing. Like, go check out at No Escalators. I don't know if they still run that site. It used to be called We Take the Stairs, and I think it was an SB Nation UConn blog. I don't know if that, I think they broke up with you at SB Nation, but they'll be go check out his Twitter handle. It's UConn football is heavily subsidized by student fees. It doesn't make any money. It doesn't make any sense.
It's not like the students love going to UConn games.
They don't.
For football, yeah.
Because they're terrible, and there's no real hope. The only hope for UConn football is if you were in a major conference.
Yeah.
And it has become extremely clear that the strength of UConn basketball, men's and women's, is not enough to get pathetic UConn football into the Big 12.
No.
Given the issues with proximity, you're just not going to get into a major conference.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because especially you kind of missed the boat with the Big 10. Because obviously, like, UConn's probably in the Big 10 would be a better program than, like, Rutgers.
No.
If UConn was in the Big 10?
No. Rutgers is the better move. Because there's a lot of... Rutgers is like the classic, like, if they could just get their shit together, that could actually be something.
But they'll never get it.
People said that about South Carolina. Like, I think Rutgers is going to end up being the South Carolina of the late 2000s era, you know, realignment, where we're all going to say, oh my God, why did the SEC take South Carolina? They're a bottom feeding shit program that's never won anything. And then you look back and you go, well, you get them in a really good conference. And some coach is eventually going to look at him and go, you know, there's a lot of money here. I could go coach here. Why not? And eventually,
yeah, you get like an aging, like, let's say you get Urban Meyer after its AIDS scandal.
Like, some coach is going to look at Rutgers in 4 or 5 years once they started getting their full check from the Big Ten. Because right now they're not getting paid like a full member.
Yeah.
Once they start getting the full check from the Big Ten as a member, like, eventually, like, somebody's going to look at that and go, you know, there's a lot of high school talent, which is something that Connecticut doesn't have. New Jersey actually does produce a lot of football talent. It's just Rutgers has never been able to get them to stay. But somebody's going to go, look, I'm a really good coach. I could convince these kids to stay and come play here. And, you know, they are in the Big Ten, and there's only so many Big Ten jobs. And that's what's going to happen. One day they're going to find that guy, because that's what always happens situations, because there's only so many major conference jobs.
All right. Well, Dan, let's move on now to week three. We said it last week. Deep dive, going to be LSU-Auburn. Sorry. But we're going to take a hard look at TCU-Ohio State, especially if that game's close. It'll probably be one I'll go back and watch. I just think it's going to be a blow. I think we kind of have the opposite opinions of both games. We're like, I think Auburn and LSU will be close, but I think Ohio State TCU, I think Ohio State wins.
See, I don't know if Ohio State does that to a Gary Patterson defense without their full assortment of coaches.
He's there. It's not like Urban's not.
Yeah, but he's not going to be there during. He's not going to be there during the game.
But is he not?
And
like, who? But Dan, this is Urban Meyer. Are we sure he's not on like a hidden cell phone somewhere?
Yeah, he is a disreputable motherfucker.
Like I don't trust that he's not calling plays now. Whether it's a weird hand signal or text message or something,
but
or it's just are they heavily scripted?
Do you also trust that this new look Ohio State, we're going to pass the ball a lot, offense is going to hold up against a real top-level defense?
I don't trust TCU yet, though. Because TCU
Their defense is legit.
But have they won a big game in the past since they've like kind of come up into this echelon?
Yeah. They should have been in the playoff. Like,
they were undefeated. And got screwed,
they
like
had
they
one loss to Baylor in overtime. If they win that game, they're in the playoff. Like, they're an overtime game away from being in the playoffs.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll see. But, like, I'm not sure they're there yet. And if they go to the playoffs, don't they probably just like get Washington?
Maybe, but, you know, who knows?
Yeah, well, that's my issue with them. All right, well, let's kick off here. No real big Thursday or Friday game, unless you're counting Boston Wake. I'm not sure which games have been canceled.
Well, Wake Forest is canceled. I can tell
okay,
you.
Okay, Wake Forest. That game's canceled. Okay, I'm going to assume all the North Carolina games are canceled?
I've not heard a single North Carolina game.
Okay. Well, then let's start with Temple, Maryland. Maryland's favored by 14. Dude, Temple's kind of fallen off, obviously. But is Maryland good enough to maybe beat, like, an old, decent-ish program?
Well, if they were playing an old, decent-ish game, maybe, but they're not. Temple is not good at football anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That brief moment in time where they were any good has come to an end. And, I think
you don't think Maryland's
going to go
3-0. Okay.
Because I think one, you got a lot of guys who are playing for their fallen team who passed away this offseason. And I think Matt Canada is really motivated, and there's other coaches on that staff who are motivated and think they may be able to keep their jobs because they think Matt Canada might get the head coaching.
I think Maryland's going to win, but I think that's first. Next up, Miami at Toledo. This is Miami, Florida. Toledo, Dan. What the fuck?
That is Miami are good for some weird scheduling because they're not as wealthy a program as you would expect.
Yes, because they're one of the big, we're going to spend some football money on Academ, right?
Yeah, they're one of those. And yeah. So they'll schedule some weird home and homes.
Yeah, okay.
In order
Florida,
to avoid
Miami,
having to pay those giant body bag game paychecks.
Yeah. Miami, Florida, favored by 11. Are they beating Toledo?
Oh, they're going to beat Toledo by plenty. Like, Mark Richt doesn't blow those games. Mark Richt never loses the games that he shouldn't lose.
Yeah.
He just never wins the games that you really hope he'd win.
Yeah. All right. I'm assuming Central Florida, North Carolina is canceled.
Canceled.
Damn shame. Much like Norm McDonald, they are canceled.
Poor Norm McDonald. If only he wasn't in such a fucking thick-ass bubble. Maybe he could have avoided.
If only he didn't have Down syndrome. Florida State goes to Syracuse. Florida State's favored by 3. Are they going to do this, or is the Big Cuse going to get the big win?
Syracuse isn't very good.
64 is the over-under.
Well, give me the over. And I think Florida State is going to get it together. I think the fact that Florida State has kind of farted around the first 2 weeks, struggling to learn this new offense, has got people putting some pretty stupid, like, lines on some games where that don't even make sense.
Yeah. Georgia Tech goes to Pittsburgh. Tech's favored by about 4, 4.5, 3.5, depends on your person.
I mean, I haven't seen any evidence that Pat Narduzzi knows how to defend this triple option.
And, like, Pittsburgh kind of disappointed against Penn State last week. Like, they got their asses kicked.
Yeah, and that was a big game for them emotionally.
Yeah.
And it was, like, only a couple of years ago. I think it was, like, either last year or the year before where Georgia Tech was up by, like, 30 by the end of the first quarter.
Yeah.
Or something crazy like that. And it's just, what are you going to do? You know?
I'm going to take Tech. I think Tech gets the bounce back. I mean, Johnson tends to bounce back. He doesn't tend to linger over bad losses, I think. Next up, Vanderbilt at Notre Dame. Two nerd schools going at it. Notre Dame's favored by 14.
Well, it's a real nerd school versus a fake nerd school.
Yeah. Who we got here? Clay Travis versus Lou Holtz. Who we got?
A battle of a fake lawyer versus a man who doesn't know how to speak.
But Notre Dame struggled last week versus Ball State. You think, in theory, Vanderbilt's better than Ball State.
Well, but I think Notre Dame was more of a hangover from, hey, we beat them.
Okay, and you think Notre Dame's going to
I don't think Vanderbilt's that good. I think Notre Dame just was on an emotional high from beating, you know, one of their biggest rivals in week one and then came out and kind of laid an egg.
Well, when's the last time Notre Dame beat an SEC team?
Well, they're not really playing one this week, so...
I'm tempted to take Vandy plus 4 tier. Until Notre Dame kind of proves it against bad teams, I'm going to keep kind of picking against them. And if that jumps up to like 20, taking Vandy all day, baby.
Wait, what's the spread again?
14.5.
Yeah, give me the points. One of the truest things that I've learned in gambling, which I'm not very good at, but one of the best pieces of advice I can give anybody is always bet against Notre Dame because their lines are always fucking crazy high because people bet on Notre Dame who have no idea what they're looking
for. Speaking of that, maybe SMU at Michigan. Michigan's favored by 35.5.
Yeah, I'm taking Michigan. SMU looks bad. They look very, very bad.
Not where they kind of were.
And here's the flaw with Michigan is their offense, right? They're not good at it. SMU could give up 45 points to a high school.
Yeah.
Like, that's how terrible their defense is. And offensively, they haven't looked as good as people expected them. People thought that Sonny Dykes was going to be plug and play, that he was going to be able to take over and see what Chad Morris had been doing and expand on it and keep it rolling. And this offense has gone in reverse.
Okay.
And, you know, I don't see how they score more than 2 touchdowns on Michigan. God knows they're going to give up a lot more than 5. So.
How about this next one? Boise State at Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State,
that's
2.5.
That's a hell of a game. Why wasn't that last week?
Yeah. Give me 2.5 for Boise.
We needed that game last week. That would have been an interesting game.
Yeah.
Because
otherwise, like, you're like me and you're just getting excited about Herm Edwards. There's nothing else. Give me Boise catching 2.5. I think they went out right. I think Boise's, I know UConn sucks, but like I think Boise's kind of on a roll this year. I'm not going to say they're back, but they're close.
This might be the year they finally win the Mountain West again.
Yeah.
San Diego State has been sort of slowly taking over that team, or that league. But yeah, give me Boise. I'm excited about this year.
BYU travels to Wisconsin. Wisconsin favored by 21.5. BYU kind of like they figured it out the past couple of weeks, but I think Wisconsin's too good.
Give me BYU. I haven't seen Wisconsin show that they can blow out a defense. They haven't looked that good. And they came into the year with some of the stats people saying this is the most overrated team in the country, and they haven't really done anything to prove the stats wrong. They have looked like one of the most overrated teams in the country.
Well, damn. Speaking of overrated, let's jump into our deep dive. LSU at Auburn. Auburn's favored by 10. Give me LSU here. I don't trust Auburn quite yet. I don't trust that running game to maybe run against LSU. Now, LSU looked pretty good against Miami. I think Auburn's clearly a tier above Miami at this point. But it didn't look so great against Washington. So and it's, LSU's probably, in theory, has more better defensive players than Washington. So I'm not sold that Auburn can win by 2.
Miami was the two most overrated teams in the country, according to the stats, according to the powerrank.com, were Wisconsin and Miami. So it's possible that LSU just looked pretty decent against a team that ain't that great.
Yeah.
And we'll see.
Well, LSU did get a blowout. Man, I don't think they played anybody worth a damn last week, but they, when you're blowing out bad teams, it means you're not playing down to people.
I'm just not convinced that that offense is going to be able to score any points against Auburn.
Yeah.
Because their offense is very, you know, run the ball between the tackles, try to spread it to throw.
You don't think the defense can make a play for 2 years? Like, I could see this being like 12 or something.
Yeah, their defense is legit, but I just don't see them being able to score more than 13 points against Auburn.
And I will
and
say,
I think
Auburn,
they're going to need more than that.
Auburn just got back. I think two of its receivers were on Davis or Hastings, so that passing attack's a little bit deeper. So maybe that makes up for the lack of run game so far. We'll find out. But I'm pretty fascinated by this game, so I think we'll learn where LSU really at. And where Auburn's at to an extent. And remember, Dan, was it 2-3 years ago? This was the keep your coach game.
The Anxiety Bowl.
Yes.
You know.
Auburn
definitely came out of it still keeping their coach. I think both teams wished, I think LSU has started to wish they kept Les Miles instead of.
Yeah.
If they had known it was going to be Ed Orgeron, they might have not been so quick.
It may if they knew how bad Tom Herman made.
Yeah, the fact that Tom Herman hasn't been this slam dunk head coach either. It's like, maybe Les Miles wasn't so bad.
Georgia Southern Clemson's been canceled, correct?
Not sure about that one. I think so.
Well, Clemson's favored by 33. Southern is undefeated so far. If that game happens, I'm considering Georgia Southern right there. Just because 33 is a lot of points for Clemson.
It is. But Georgia Southern might be terrible.
Yeah. No, they're back. 2-0.
Yeah. Yeah. They haven't looked great, though, in some of those.
I'm considering if it's there. Just because I don't trust Clemson to beat a team by that much.
But see, when they play FCS teams, they just overwhelm them. So I think they're. I don't think you have to. Give me Clemson.
Let's shove now. New Mexico, New Mexico State. New Mexico favored by 4.5. Who do we like in the desert?
What's the battle for the Rio Grande?
What's the prize for this one? Is this like
the Rio Grande River?
Is it?
Yeah, you own the Rio Grande River. That's how it works.
I know nothing about either team. New Mexico's favored. Sure.
New Mexico State. Had a Cinderella miraculous year last year. They made a bowl game for the first time in like 50 years. This year they look like they're back down to.
Yeah, they look pretty bad against. They look pretty bad against Wyoming, a team pretty bad against better competition.
Wyoming has a legit defense. Wyoming is very good at defense. Wyoming can't score. Their offense is still putrid. So you know, but Wyoming at the G5 level has one of the better defense.
How about this one, Dan? Colorado State at Florida. Florida's favored by 20.5. Give me the points, baby. Give me them points. Eat them up right there until that's gonna drop. I mean, it's dropping to 19.5 some places. That'll probably drop to 17, I bet, by Saturday. I think a lot of people are gonna take Colorado State.
From Florida before I start giving them that kind of point spread and trust.
Three touchdowns? Yeah. And a Colorado State team, which isn't awful. I think got to a slow start, but maybe that's because they're
they scored points fucking in every game, and the head coach had no feeling in his feet.
Yeah.
It was up in the booth instead of on the sideline.
I found this one interesting, Dan. North Texas at Arkansas. Arkansas's only favored by a touchdown.
Ooh, that's a dicey one. Yeah, New Mexico might win Conference USA this year.
North Texas.
What did I say?
New Mexico.
North Texas, New Mexico might win the Conference USA this year.
NTMU. NMU. Let's see what we got next here. I think this is another, for the SEC, kind of an interesting week, I think. Because you got Bama versus Ole Miss. Bama by 21.5.
Whew!
I think that happened over under 71.
I think Ole Miss is going to keep that one close. Because it's
do you think it hit 70? You think we'll get 71?
I'm taking the over, and I'm taking Ole Miss, not to win it outright, but I think they're gonna. I think they're gonna cover that.
I could see like 51-35.
Yeah, I think this is a really close game, and then Alabama's gonna injure somebody important in like the late third, early fourth, and pull away. And then that could be the end of Ole Miss's season.
I think this could also be one of those where like Ole Miss throws like a pick six in the third. To start the half or something weird. And Bama just never looks back. Like, maybe this is like 21-20 at half. and then turns into 51-35 by the end. And that's with some garbage. You're gonna, if you're taking the over here, which I'm gonna do, you got, you're banking on Ole Miss garbage. You're banking on like maybe Alabama being up 4 touchdowns in the third.
Yeah. Yeah.
We got next here. Missouri Purdue. Missouri favored by 6.5. Give me that all day.
Yeah, give me Missouri. Purdue is terrible.
Purdue is awful. More like Purdue. You saw me and everyone else on Twitter, I think, mean Thursday or Saturday. All right, how about this one? This one would feel big 10 years ago, but now it's just kind of a battle of the disappointment bowl, if you will. Southern Cal at Texas. Texas favored by 3.5.
Give me Texas. USC's look putrid. Like, Texas looks good for, like,
against Stanford, yeah.
Yeah, Texas looks good against for a half a game, and then they fall apart.
Yeah.
USC has not looked good ever.
I'm going to say this right now. This might be one of the worst major games of the year. Yeah. It's on, like, primetime network TV. This game's going to suck.
What was that game Notre Dame played a few years ago? Notre Dame-Texas. Yeah. And it had all that ballyhoo in week one, and it was actually a fun game because both of them kind of sucked. And they had kind of, like, there were two, like, equally shitty teams just throwing bombs at each other. And, you know, when it was over, it was like, oh, man, Texas is set up for a run. And then they ended up going, like, 5-7, and Notre Dame went 4-8. Like, that's what this game feels.
Yeah, give me Texas. Over-under is 48. Give me the under. Liking that under a lot. I think this could be like a 43. Like, when I think back to like that Dallas Carolina NFL game this weekend, Dan, it's gonna be like that. It's like a really shitty fucking game, like SEC football going on right here.
It's gonna be El Asico version 2.
Next up, 8:00, ABC, Ohio State at Texas Christian. Ohio State favored by 13.5. Give me that. I like Ohio State to win by.
Nope.
Give me TCU. I'm not buying.
I'm buying everything that's being sold to me from TCU. I'm investing in Fort Worth property, selling Columbus. Just like what's actually happened is the Columbus's only professional sports team picks up and leaves for a minor Texas city. Just like that, I'm supporting that minor.
Well, no, Columbus has an NHL team.
Not anymore. It's moving to Austin.
The Blue Jackets?
Yep.
I thought the MLS team, both are moving.
The Blue Jackets are moving to Austin, I'm pretty sure.
Are you sure it wasn't the MLS team?
It could be.
Like, the Blue Jackets like have a pretty good following.
I'm not sure they do. I think it's just Rob. It's literally just Rob.
Can you look that up while we jump to the next game?
I can try. Let's do that.
Blue Jackets Austin. That's really, put that in Google. Because next up's Washington at Utah. Washington's favored by 6.5. Utah's pretty decent, though. If that was more, I think I'm taking Utah. But I think Washington win by a touchdown. But I think this is a pretty interesting early test for the old Husky.
Yeah, I think so.
We have an answer.
It was the hockey team. It was. Not the hockey, to the soccer team.
Okay, thank you. Never doubt me, Dan.
I don't know the difference between hockey and soccer.
Well, one's on one you rollerblade on grass, and the other one you, I believe. Next up, Arizona State at San Diego State.
Before you continue, was there a point in your life when you thought that's what field hockey was? Because I did. I tell you that for a fact.
Field hockey, I assume, is a thing lesbian. I don't know what that is.
Well, you assumed right. But, but, that's good.
Like, softball's for, like, straight girls who, like, maybe fuck around a little bit in college. Field hockey's for diehard lesbians.
Negasonic Teenage Warhead, or whatever her name was from that movie.
I think this might be the biggest game, you know, post 8:00. Arizona State at San Diego State. Arizona State's favored by 5.5. Give me Herm Edwards, baby. The CEO is going to get it done, and maybe it's toughest game so far this year.
I'm taking Herb, and this is right, and I'm going to call him Herb. I'm calling him Herb because he's Dave Meltzer of football. I'm taking Herm. I mean, Herm is already an old Jewish name, so let's be fair. San Diego State's going to play too much like an NFL team. He's gonna be like, oh, this team's playing regular. Great. I know how to deal with this. and I think that's going to be the downfall of San Diego State. They're running into a team. Like, San Diego State's thing is to zig when everybody else zags. Everybody else is going to run the spread offense.
When they're running to the ultimate zag.
And they're running into a coach who's just like, I see you. I see you're zagging.
Like, I was running this in 98. Whatever, Herm Edwards.
I think his first head coaching job was 2001 or 2000.
Yeah.
He followed Al Groh at New York, and that's what led to the famous
Virginia legend, Al Groh.
And that's what led to the famous speech about why you play game.
Play to win the game, and that's what he did. And I think our boy Herm's going to keep it going. Herm Edwards, what are we going to do then if we get to October and Herm Edwards is undefeated with, like, what, two or three major wins? He's going to set the world on fire at that point?
Look, at that point, it's like all things are possible. Let's Herm 2020. Like, let's forget football. Let's get Herm ready to be the next person.
Yeah, let's just do it. Let's do it now. Let's impeach everybody. Everyone's out. We're going to change the Constitution. Whoever the coach at Arizona State is, the next president should be.
Well, this is also going to be how we avoid the constitutional crisis. We've got to bring in an outsider so that it's not so partisan. You know, if you replace Trump with a Democrat in the middle of the administration.
Well, that's why you replace Trump with Saban. I think that's the, go back to, like, our plan to save America. It's Nick Saban as president. Our plan to save America and college.
Because we're sick and tired of him beating everybody.
Well, like, I was thinking back to this, like, about how many people I know, especially down here, about the Golden State Warriors win the title every year. Alabama wins the title more than Golden State.
And they're in the playoff, literally. They're in the Final Four every year.
They're in the championship. When was the last time they won? Was the first year of the playoff? And
Ohio State beat them in the semis.
Yeah. Like, ever since then, they've been in the playoff every, like, the final game every year. And won it, what, every time but once? And, like, what, in the past 15 years, Alabama's won it more than not, right? Like, seven. How many titles does Saban have? Like, seven or eight at this point?
It's a lot.
I'm getting count. It's to the point where, like, I like the attitude I think the full cast takes, where it's just like, you just go in your championship thing. We're going to have fun over here. Like, you
can't take the fun from us.
Yeah, like, we're going to have fun. You go win your title. Who gives a shit? Which is the ultimate college football attitude. That's it. But I think it's going to be a fun week. I'm looking, I think we got three or four major games are going to be really fun.
Oh! And the game of the week, Army versus Hawaii.
Ooh. And I forgot the spread on that one. Because Hawaii let us down last week against Rice, right?
They scored a bunch of points. Let's not take that away.
I didn't see the final score. I remember, like, they weren't beating the spread.
I think it was, like, 48 to 27 or something like that.
They didn't beat the spread, right?
I don't think so.
That one is Army minus six. Jump on that shit. I don't care that Hawaii's playing at noon. Give me Hawaii. Cole McDonald doesn't care about time zones.
Hell yeah, give me Hawaii. Give me Hawaii.
Give me Hawaii, all right. I don't know what the money line. Take the money line on Hawaii. Fuck them catching five. They're going to win. Army's not that good. I think it'll be a fun week, though. And, like, Dan, you didn't watch the NFL. It's one of the best opening weekends in NFL history that you just missed out on.
Is it?
What? Well, you had Aaron Rodgers. His knee exploded. He came back down from 20. One of the few times I will enjoy an Aaron Rodgers. It's a lot of fun. You had Cleveland-Pittsburgh go to a tie. And just, like, a lot of wackiness everywhere. It was a really fun week, I thought.
I'll believe it.
And you had two games that came down to a punt return being fumbled before the team could get their last drive. You don't get better than that. A lot of fun. And even more fun next week. So, and we got to laugh at John Gruden.
God, John Gruden.
And also, Marshawn Lynch, Dan, literally carried an entire team to a goal line touchdown.
I mean, that is what Marshawn Lynch does.
It was beautiful. And we saw the picture of him in high school, so.
It was a good picture. He looked like a smart young lad.
Looked like a Black Girls Code kind of guy. I think that's like one of his charities. There you go. So, anything else before we get out of here? We went long this week.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody stay safe. I've got a hurricane coming straight at me. If you're in the path of a hurricane, latest information on Florence is that she's been downgraded to a Category 2. That's great news.
Fuck yeah.
We may not die.
Trump did it. Trump, you know, I think Trump went with our fan idea, where you just blow a bunch of big industrial fans at the hurricane, counteract it.
Oh, man, did you hear that Trump thought that we could get rid of the deficit by just printing a lot more money?
We can. That's what you did. Like, that's the first time I've agreed with a Trump policy, because he gets that, like, the economy's made up bullshit. It's fake. No one understands that more than Trump, how bullshit our financial system is. Like, trust me.
This is all fake anyway.
Yeah, and it's all, like, I don't care if you're an economist or whatever, like, you're the equivalent of, like, a horoscope. Like, it's all pseudo-bullshit science. It's made up by man. It's fake! It's not real! It's not a real science. I'm sorry. There's no such thing as the economy in nature. I'm sure you could point out, like, an example of, like, is there a baboon trading shekels for, like, a banana? No. There's none of that shit in nature. Fuck off, economists. That's my fuck you of the week.
Fuck off, economists.
And even, like, ones, like, I might agree with, fuck you. Your whole career is bullshit. It's pseudoscience horseshit. Fuck off.
In general...
Not real.
In general, I'm always irritated at people who, like, come up with, like, an educational discipline and then name it something that sounds like science when it is extremely clearly not a science.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
well, it's like, Dan, I'm a poli-sci guy, and I understand, like, this is all bull.
Yeah, political science is not science. There is nothing about it.
It's a social science.
There's nothing about political science that's a science. Like, psychology is not a science.
Chemistry, not really a science.
Chemistry is obviously a science.
No, chemistry is math.
Well, yeah, it's science.
Is math science? No, it's math and science.
Chemistry is the oldest science. It's the original science.
It's the oldest math.
No, there math is was no. around before.
I don't understand. Big picture, there is no science. Galaxy brain, it's no such thing as science.
But like psychology, not science.
The oldest science is theology.
I'm a big believer in, like, we gotta go after psychology and knock it down a bit. If for no other reason than we've got to stop evolutionary psychologists somehow. Because that is the most brain-dead fucking horse shit in the history of the world.
Right next to economists.
Like, basically the entirety of evolutionary psychology could be disproven by, like, a cursory understanding of history. Because, like, my favorite thing that, like, evolutionary psychology always does is, like, dumbass shit, like, well, this is the evolutionary reason why boys gravitate to the color blue and why girls gravitate to the color pink. And then you go, well, wait a minute. All little boys were dressed in pink up until, like, 1920.
Fucking, you look at pictures of, like, Teddy Roosevelt, and he was in a fucking dress. And he's like, literally all, like the most all manly little boys, man ever.
All little boys were put in dresses until... Like, until basically the invention of television.
Yeah.
Because...
And because, like, you know, boys want to play video games because it's similar to hunting. No, it's not. Boys play video games because, like, it was on the boy toy aisle. Because Nintendo said, we have to put it on one aisle, we're going to pick boys. But before that, like, Pac-Man and all that bullshit was, like, almost half and half girls and boys.
Exactly.
And we see it now as video games got away from being a toy and, like, into, like, a computer thing. Guess what? A lot more girls. Wild.
Yep.
But that's going to segue me into one thing really quick, Dan, before we got here. Spider-Man fucking owns.
Yeah, I'm going to be playing it in like 5 minutes when we finish up.
Oh, you haven't played it yet?
No, I finished it already.
Oh,
and I restarted it because that's how much I love it.
Wow, I haven't quite finished it yet. I forgot what I just did.
Basically,
I go to Grand Central Station. No, I just did Grand Central Station.
I basically spent my entire as soon as the football games ended, I basically was like, you know what? Spider-Man. I gotta play Spider-Man.
Yeah.
That's how good the story is. You wanna treat it like a movie. You gotta see it.
Yeah, and with the suits and the way you can change your web. Like, I love the web that you shoot everywhere.
Yep. I like how your web slinging doesn't count towards your web cartridge.
Yes. That owns, and what also owns is J. Jonah Jameson as Alex Jones was the best.
That is a comic book thing. I mean, there are people bitching about certain things about this game, and, like, Mary Jane Watson apparently isn't enough of a 10, and,
Yeah, or, like, people are mad at her missions, and I'm like, the stealth missions are, like, my favorite part. Like, it's the first time I've enjoyed stealth, and so, I don't get it.
I mean...
I wish Aunt May was hotter.
Well, sure, like the movies.
Yeah.
You know, they
more
got...
More like Sally Field's hot.
They got the lady from My Cousin Vinny for the MCU movie.
Yeah.
And it makes it
also from The Wrestler.
And it makes it, yeah, ooh, The Wrestler.
The Wrestler.
Have you ever seen a one-legged dog?
Dan, I had a story about Australia, but I completely... Oh, Australia! You're back on the fuck you because you're stupid fucking racist cartoonist.
Yeah, you went after Serena Williams. You
get the race of Osaka right. And, like, was and literally just, like, drew Serena as a fucking gorilla. It was like, what's racist about this? And it's like, what?
My favorite thing was seeing, like,
lips and fur.
Like, she literally looks like Aunt Jemima. What the fuck do you think? Like, John Cleese is out here like, well, how can you be a caricaturist if you can't play up certain caricatures? And it's like, all right, maybe pick fucking one racial fucking caricature to play.
Or if you're gonna do a caricature of Serena, then like just make her shoulders too big or something. Like
Serena doesn't have huge lips. Like she doesn't. Like her thighs aren't like her waist is not wider than her fucking rest of her body.
Yeah, like, she's just built like a fucking linebacker. Like that's just I would have just drawn like a football player.
I mean, I think it was a dumb fucking subject.
Well, that is because Australia is fucking racist, and every time there's a shooting in America, they want to pretend like they're so cool. Well, you know what, Australia? Fuck you. You're worse than America. How about that shit? You don't even fucking exist.
And never forget, with all this Serena Williams controversy, never forget the fact that, like, this ain't the first time she's, like, this didn't just happen out of a fucking vacuum. This sport has been out to get her and her sister for fucking decades.
Yeah.
And they can say what they want. Serena Williams has three strikes against her. One, she's American, and that's bad enough. Because the people who run tennis are all a bunch of European snobbish assholes.
Yeah.
And anybody from America is automatically behind one eight.
Yeah.
Two, she's not rich. Like, she didn't come for money. She grew up in Compton.
Well, I think there's four strikes here. She's black, and
well, that
she's
was
like
gonna
a
be
pretty
the
outspoken
strike.
Liberal. And she's kind of, like, woke. Like, she's not like a Tiger Woods deal.
The third strike was that, and she's black. And these are all a bunch of shitty Europeans who think that, like, Europe did a favor to Africa by brutally colonizing.
These are people who still think Emmanuel Macron or whatever is, like, doing
it. Like, they think the real thing that's going to solve the European migrant crisis, which isn't really a crisis, it's just a bunch of white people not wanting to live next to brown people who believe in a religion. Because
it's like, microtransactions. Or not micro, was it like micro?
Microaggressions.
It's micro lending, right? That's like their big plan. It's like, what if we loaned a penny to Africa?
George Soros' idea is that Europe just completely bail out all African economy to try to get them up and running so that they can hire people to stay there.
Yeah, which, that's the best idea.
That's the best idea I've heard, but it still is like the idea of just, well, let's just fucking get along and stop being dicks. that's just not...
Have you met history?
I mean, especially Europeans. Like, that's just the idea of like, hey, let's just, I mean, this is just a different culture. Let's just like get along and try to, let's all like blend ourselves together and take a little bit of theirs and they can take a little bit of ours and we can all learn from each other. Like, as shitty as America has been to a lot of people, we at least tend to get that right. Like,
yeah. We're like, oh, some of the shit's, like, look around at American restaurants. We're like, oh, some of the shit's really good. I don't really like these Indian people, but like they make a good dish.
And then
I think
you go
even
to Europe.
England probably gets that. An English person.
You like, go to English, Europe and, no, if you talk to the average English person, they get annoyed if their breakfast has, like, an ounce of spice.
No, but they love Indian food. Not, like, spice, like, English-style Indian food, but they fucking love that shit. I was told this by a British person.
They do like curry. They do like Indian food.
Yeah.
But they like really mild, non-spicy.
Yeah, the best thing.
And they fucking, their idea of like a great breakfast is a bunch of deep-fried bullshit with a, like a runny egg and some beans piled over everything.
Yeah. And a good breakfast is always just deep-fried.
Whereas like in America, we've got a lot more ethnic restaurants. I mean, once you leave London, because obviously London's like fucking New York. It's a huge city.
Yeah.
That's the other thing that I get annoyed with in England is where they all like, well, we've got London. It's like, yeah, we've got New York. Like, fucking, talk about any city other than London in England.
Yeah,
like,
if you go to,
like, well, you know.
Even Dan, where you are, there's probably like several Chinese restaurants.
Yeah, I got one I went to today.
I have
a Chinese restaurant. And it's actually
like, there's
good.
Literally, in
Mississippi, it's one of the best Chinese restaurants I've ever eaten at. It is the worst sanitation grade of any place I've ever eaten at, but it's delicious.
Because that means it's good. Like, in Delta, Mississippi, there's literally, like, a brand, like, the type of Chinese people who, like, talk with a southern accent and, like, own businesses. You don't really get that a lot of places. So, I think that's it for this week. Next week, what are we looking forward to? Is there a big game next week?
Yeah, there's all kinds of good stuff.
I forgot to check the schedule.
Yeah, I've just been watching Weather Channel all day. I don't know.
Well, you mean you could be dead next week, so
yeah,
we
I mean,
could
there's
be
no
back.
There's no point worrying about. There's no point in worrying about tomorrow. Let's worry about what's here today and see how it works.
We could be back with
Here's my hurricane preparedness plan. I got a dinghy in case it floods that bad. I can float in a boat until FEMA comes and gets me. I got a freezer full of meat, and the freezer is one of those freezers that's supposed to last up to some 3 days before it loses its cold.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a propane grill with a full thing of propane.
Well, then, if you make it to next week, looking ahead, Arizona, Washington's probably the deep dive, but also Nebraska, Michigan, and Clemson, Georgia Tech. So,
that'd be cool. I want to see Nebraska, Michigan.
Yeah, I want to see all these games actually. Because I mean, if Arizona State and Washington win this week, which they probably both should, it's a pretty big game. Could be a Pac-12 preview. So maybe something to look forward to.
That's pretty good.
So anyway, best of luck to anyone dealing with bad weather. And if you have to evacuate, consider coming to Dunwoody, Georgia, and coming to my bar. So.
It'll be the one. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, just fine. Yeah, just look for an English pub, and we're the one near the country. There you go.
Well, I'm a member of a country club. Country music is what I love. And on that note, you know, fuck Australia. Fuck the Queen. And fuck Australia. Or fuck Ole Miss. Double fuck Australia. And play the music. And fuck Florence. Fuck you, Florence. And play the music, Jason.
And your machine.